welcome to the second episode of the XYZ Machine Tools podcast. We're glad that you've been able to join us for this second episode. The first one went down pretty well. Lots of great feedback on the internet for us. So it's nice that you've come back. And if this is your first one, welcome to watching us talk about everything XYZ and just general engineering. I'm Machining Mike. As we've probably seen from the first episode, I've been with XYZ a number of years now. And on this episode, my co-host is going to be Mark Higson here. Mark's been with XYZ a number of years. So what sort of roles have you done at XYZ, Mark?
Well, I started off in the programming support in the service office. So I've been here 17 years.
I think I took you on to do that job.
You certainly did. You certainly did all them years ago. And I spent around 9.5 years in the service office. And then I came off the programming support role. And I moved on to our UMC5X, full simultaneous 5-axis machine. I did that for a couple of years as project work and training. And since then, I've come back into applications. So I did a little bit, started off on training, and then I've led into being the applications team leader, which I've been for now for the last couple of years.
Okay, so again, vast experience here, a lot of knowledge about products, which again, you're able to communicate with our customers all that vast knowledge of both the legacy stuff, the older stuff, and today's current products as well.
Yeah, sure. So obviously before I came to XYZ, I spent 4 years at a customer of XYZ's where we had some VMC 1010 models, if you remember those, with the...
I do, very well.
Yeah, one of them had the fourth axis on it, and then the other machine we had at that company was the TC200 with live tooling. So no Y axis, just a C axis.
So another member of the team here at XYZ that's got great experience, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And of course, in your role as the applications team leader, you've recently had the privilege of going out to Taiwan to our supplier to see this, our latest machine in the portfolio, the 400 UMC. It's a new product to us. You went out to Taiwan to test it for us before it got put on a boat and now has literally just arrived at XYZ.
Yes.
So let's get a little bit of the spec out of the way first for the techie people that like to listen and watch us on the internet. So can you tell us a little bit about the traverses that the machine's got for a start?
Yeah, certainly. So we've got an X-axis of 800 millimetres, we've got Y-axis of 600 millimetres, and the Z-axis of 510 millimetres.
So a nice capacity then for general type of work then?
Oh yeah, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, and of course it is a 4+1 or a 5-axis machine, which we'll come back to in a moment. So what about the table on the machine? What size is the table?
The table's 400 millimetres.
Okay, and that again gives you great capacity. A question I've got here though that might be interesting for people. You said the X-axis is 800 millimetres and the table's only 400. Why have we got such a big X-axis?
Well, I mean, you can use it as a three-axis machine if you like, but also when you're tilting on your B-axis, it's a B-axis machine, you might want that big travel on either side of it to...
Of course, when you tilt over, of course, you want to be able to get to the top end of that part when it's been tilted over.
Of course.
Hence, I just thought I'd mention that because it's occurred to me 800 in X and a 400 table, but of course, when you've got a part standing up and it tilts over, of course, you'll need that extra capacity, won't you?
Yes.
So that's good. So what about, you've said it's a 400 millimetre diameter table. What sort of weight of component can we put on there?
You can put 250 kilograms on the table.
Well, a quarter of a ton, that's a fair amount of component then for such a small table.
Of course, yeah.
So for me, one of the questions I've got now then is the driving of that fourth and fifth axis, that tilt and the rotary table. If you can put such a weight on it, driving that around has got to be like seamless, if you like, for want of a better description. And on this product, our supplier's gone out there and done something a little bit different to what the norm is, I suppose we class it as. So how is the fourth and the fifth axis driven on this particular machine?
We've got Japanese roller cam on that system.
So this is quite a different design for what we've been used to here at XYZ, with normally we use a worm and wheel, or occasionally on some machines we've had direct drive.
Yeah.
So on this mechanism, when you were using the machine in Taiwan, Mark, doing your cutting tests, did you see a big improvement on what you do over a normal worm and wheel mechanism?
Yeah, certainly. So let's look at the backlash first. On the tilt, it's 0.003 of a degree, and on the rotary, it's 0.006 of a degree. So the parts we got out when we were over in Taiwan were stunning.
So I bet you're gagging to now get on this machine and start making some further stuff on here to really get a grips of how it can perform.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Our next project is we're going to produce a skull for our seminar days.
Oh, fantastic. And Rotational speed, as we know from the products that we've sold before, is quite important in producing nice surface finishes and stuff like that. So when we're tilting and rotating this table, what sort of speed does this table run at?
We've got a maximum of 30 RPM on both axes.
That's a pretty fair old rate.
Yeah.
You know, only product I've seen of ours that goes faster than that is the UMC 5X with a motorised drive on it, which obviously you'll get a big improvement on that.
Yes.
Talking about the rotary tilt rotary there and its speed, obviously efficiency is one of the key points of this machine, which again, we'll come back to in a little while. But what has the customer got in terms of the number of tools that it can hold in the machine?
So as standard, we've got a 30 station ATC with an option to go to 60 ATC and maybe looking at higher at some point in down the future.
Okay, so at the moment, 30 is, for most of our customers, is quite a nice number, to be fair. And with the Siemens control, which again we'll mention in a moment, with the tool management system on there, being able to unload tools and whatever, you've got a lot of flexibility in changing jobs over if you want to do that.
Yeah, certainly.
So what about the spindle on the machine? What's the standard RPM?
Standard RPM is 12,000, and we've got an option to go to 15,000.
Okay, and the spindle arrangement?
This is an inline spindle, so we have got very low growth on the spindle.
Oh, that's really good, because of course, we've had an inline spindle on one of our other products, the 1060 HS machine,
yes.
One of our flagship machines for mould and die, if you like. And customers that have had that product are reporting back to us the growth in the Z over 40 hours cycle time is so negligible, it's not worth bothering about. So we've gone with the same concept on this machine?
Yes, as standard.
As standard?
Yes.
Okay. And in terms of tool holders then, we know it's a 40 taper. Is it BBT or is it just standard?
No, it is BBT. So yeah, you've got face and taper location.
So again, I suppose there's big advantages there in rigidity when your table is on the tilt and you're working with long jobs with long tooling, I suspect.
Of course, yeah. Probably absolutely, I would say absolutely necessary with long tools.
So that's great in terms of rigidity of the spindle. One of the other things that the machine comes in with is through spindle coolant, of course. We know the benefits of through spindle coolant, but when I've done demos in the past when I was doing your role and things like that, I found that people didn't fully understand the benefits of through spindle coolant. And I saw the videos of your demonstration stuff and the work you did in Taiwan, and I saw that you were using through spindle coolant. So for those that really have never had a grasp on using through spindle coolant, what are the benefits of using through spindle coolant?
So when you're doing drilling with through spindle coolant, you're running at 3 or 4 times the feed rate. So you're producing parts much faster than you would without through spindle coolant. You've also got the fact that it extends the tool life and it evacuates the chips massively as well.
I think that last point you made there, Mark, is very relevant in the fact that, you know, when I spoke to the Ceratizic boys who we partner up with on tooling, they've always told me swarf's the killer for a tool. And when you're drilling deep holes, getting that swarf out is so important, and the through spindle coolant will help on that, of course.
Yeah, it'll just blast it all out.
Yeah, eject it out and stop it binding up in that hole.
Yeah.
So with this product, one of the other things that we've focused on tremendously is automation. And automation is a topic that I'm going to come to later in the podcast. But this machine has been designed to take automation in its stride, if you like. So what have the manufacturers done to make automation simple to fit to this machine?
So we've got a side-loading door for automation, which most people would like when it's when there's a robot arm involved.
So, and of course, when we talk about automation, we have to think about clamping the part as well, whether that's hydraulic or pneumatic. How have the suppliers taken that into account on this tilt rotary table?
So we've got hydraulic and pneumatic services on the actual table itself. So as you quite rightly said, we can put an automatic vise on there or an automatic fixture and drive it directly from the table.
Okay. And to make this thing all work properly, of course, one of the important things is the control itself.
Yes.
So I think most people know that we're synonymous with using Siemens controls on our products. One of the early adopters of Shotmill we were, and it's proven to be quite a success for XYZ. This latest Siemens control that we're using here, first of all, the model, it's
Sinumeric 1.
Sinumeric 1, the very latest stuff that Siemens
yes.
are releasing.
Yes.
And we've gone all out on this to make it, I suppose, look appealing to customers, really, in the fact it's got a 22-inch touch screen.
Yeah, it's massive,
so
isn't it?
It's massive. It's a bit like being at the cinema, to be fair. Now, again, I'm coming back to your experience in Taiwan using the machine, how did you like using such a large screen?
In all honesty, it's the best control configuration I've ever used. It's just so comfortable, everything's laid out, it's the controls at your waist. We've got the spindle and feed override that have got haptic feedback when you reach 100%. So if you're leaning in the machine, looking at your part and you're adjusting your speed and feed, you know when you've reached 100% because it buzzes you.
Yeah, I had a bit of a play with that last week when the machine was brought in for the first time. And although a slightly weird feeling, I must say, yeah. I thought it was fantastic. Like you say, when you're looking at what the tool's doing on the work part, not focusing on the override here, when you get to that 100% and you can feel the vibration under your fingers, it was great to know, oh, I'm at 100% now. So,
yeah.
And obviously you benefited from that when you were testing the machine. So.
And also as a side to that, Mike, the feed override dial, you can use to as a cycle stop and cycle start button as well.
Oh, so I presume just by pressing it and it does your cycle start and cycle stop. So, you know, that moment where you think it is going a little bit Pete Tong, as they say, you can just press the button and it'll stop the cycle for you.
Exactly.
Oh, fantastic. That's really good. So just before we wrap up on the 400 UMC mark, there's one other little thing, a topic that I'd like to bring up, and that is on the side of the machine, there's a chiller. Now, I know we're going to get asked when we do our seminar days and exhibitions, what's the chiller for? So I'm going to ask you that to get it out there early. What's the chiller for?
So the chiller is for the spindle and ball screw.
Okay, so what's the effect of that then on the machine? How does it help the parts that are coming off?
Well, obviously, being a five-axis machine, you're going to be moving that part round, you know, swiveling it on the tilt and rotary. You want the accuracy there. So that's just another feature that's going to bring those parts in, you know, within tolerance that you need.
And because it also chills the ball screws, are you getting more, I'll use the word standardisation on the machine for want of a better word, that it can control any growth when you're moving the machine very quickly and heat's generated?
Yes, exactly. So on your long-running CAD-CAM programs, you're not going to see any growth.
And again, going back to the 1060, that has the same feature on. And again, those same customers are telling us that when they do their long 35, 40-hour runs on their mold tools, they're seeing benefits in controlling size a lot better. So it's a great feature that they've brought across to this product as well.
Yes.
I think the icing on the cake, though, Mark, with this product is the way that it's set up to give customers flexibility when they purchase it. So when I talk about flexibility, can you enlighten us about what we mean by that?
Yeah, certainly. So when they buy this machine, they don't have to jump straight into full simultaneous five axis. They can buy this machine as a 4+1 model, so where you can have four axes running simultaneously and one on its own, and that can mix and match on those axes. And you'll probably find that most customers, that will suit them for their needs and their parts. But if down the line, when they've already got the machine and they're running parts, they all of a sudden have a need for full simultaneous five axis, we can easily upgrade that machine for them.
Okay, that sounds like a great option for people, that they don't have to commit to having it a certain way, for example, five axis right from the start, because I guess there is a cost implication to going up to full five axis. If customers want to make that change, does it have to be done on the factory order or can it be done after the event?
No, it can be done after the event, yeah. It can be done once they've got the machine in the factory. We can go send a service engineer in to do that upgrade.
It sounds like it's giving people options to basically move into multi-phase machining without having to commit to a full five-axis machine that, and then they can change further down the line if they want to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's a great way of handling it, and at the moment I don't know anybody else that offers that capability. So it's a good option for our customers. Now, one of the things for me when I'm looking at this product, it does look, if machine tools ever are sexy, it certainly looks sexy. You know, the cycle light around the outside and whatever. And I think it would be a great addition to anybody's workshop, not just for machining a part, but also aesthetically, and wanting to appeal to, oh, I need another operator for this. If you walked in and saw this as a product in your workshop, I think you'd think, yes, I definitely want to come and work this machine. But we all know, of course, we've got a big problem with skill shortage in this country, haven't we?
Yeah.
And that leads me to something that I picked up on the other week was the industrial strategy that the government have just released. A 160-page document. I must admit, I've not read all of it yet. But I am ploughing my way through it to see how relevant it is to XYZ and where we can assist in it along the way. And there are two elements in it. They talk about that their IS8, I think they're called, the eight sectors of business and industry that the government have picked up on that they think they should be assisting and helping with. And there was two elements of that IS8, or those eight things that I picked up on that I think XYZ can certainly help with. One of them is actually energy. Now, the government's strategy is really all focused on providing businesses with high energy consumption, with lower costs, getting them on the grid as fast as possible to help them develop and grow the business. But I've read the article and I've read those pages of the industrial strategy, and I think XYZ can help customers in a different way on that. And that is with the fact that we've got a large range of products here. And you do lots of demos for people, Mark. So in terms of somebody using energy, how can we help the customer to reduce his energy bill along the way?
So when a customer wants to buy a machine off us, he might come in thinking he needs a large VMC with all singing, all dancing bells and whistles. And when we look at what they're actually doing, the salesman and the apps team will advise them of the correct machine for the job. Now, it might well be that they need one of our smaller machines, and obviously that's going to save them money on energy. But what we will not do is what we will always try and do is sell the right product for the customer for his needs, based on his needs.
Yeah, and I think that's quite important with the release of another new product to us, the KMX 2500 that we've done. And we mentioned that in the last podcast with Martin Jones, of course, is that buying that right product to do the products that you machine. If you bought, for example, this machine, it's five axis. If you only do three axis type work and you're only drilling PCDs and stuff like that, you're paying a lot of money for a machine that's really not going to get utilised fully, is it?
So
I think you're right. It's quite important that we focus on that. Selling the right machine for the right thing that you want it to do. So it's a little bit like I had the analogy a few weeks ago where I said, if you lived a few miles away from the shops and you pop down the shops two or three times a week, would you buy a Ferrari to go and do it? Well, I don't think you would you? You'd buy something more to that because of the running cost of Ferrari, a lot more expensive. Uses more fuel, unless you're electric, of course, and also the insurance costs and all that. So to go and buy your shopping is a lot more expensive. You probably don't think so when you're at the shop. It's still the same price. But actually, when you take the whole thing into account, it is more expensive, isn't it? So, and I think you're right. The apps team particularly are well-versed in making sure that we look at what customers want to do. So I think that's quite an important part of the government want to help us on the industrial strategy in making sure people get energy at the right price and all this, but I think we can help customers as well. So, if people come and look at a machine at one of our showrooms, the apps team and the sales team doing that demo on the right product will help them reduce their costs overall, really. So another part of the industrial strategy that I thought was quite interesting was they've highlighted the skill shortage. Now, I'm sure you're sick of your guys telling you all of the time about skill shortage. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. And we hear it all around the country that there definitely is a skills shortage.
And I also recently did an article about skill shortage in Europe as well. So it isn't unique just to the UK. So it is a problem worldwide. Now, obviously here, the government again are looking at investing in technical excellence centres and all this sort of thing. But again, I think XYZ can help people out in terms of getting their skill levels up. So let's go back to your role in the business as the applications team leader. How many guys have you got in your team?
So I've currently got four guys out on the road, including, and then I've got myself as well, who covers every now and again. Out of those guys, I've got one very, very experienced guy who's been with us 25 years. And then the rest of the team, all great industrial background, lots of experience, good on all our controls, and they fulfil all our training and demos.
Okay. So when it comes to training and giving people the skills to operate our machine, maybe others as well, but predominantly our machine, what type of training do we undertake here at XYZ to give these people the skills to help UK PLC, I suppose?
So we offer quite a few different types of training. So the first one is our classroom training, where we get candidates in and they sit down in a nice classroom environment, nice relaxed environment. We have our controls sat on the table. Our trainer is with them. He runs through a training course, learning all the aspects of the programming and setting tools and all the various other bits. We also do one-on-one training at the machine for customers in our showrooms. And then finally, we offer training out on site as well, wherever needed. It might well be that the customer has got a specialist application or they need some help really at their machine, so we offer that as a service as well.
Okay. And just going back to that industrial strategy thing again, the government are willing to plough a lot of money into some new excellent training centres, they're calling them. With education, we do something a little bit different for education. Education is quite an important part of our business. We have a dedicated sales guy for education, of course, John Aspinall, who's quite willing to go and visit colleges and education establishments to, again, like we mentioned earlier, make sure they buy the right machine for training the younger people of today that are coming into our industry. What do we do in terms of training education?
So we are a lot more open with education. We, like you've just said, we see the massive benefits. The students are coming through. We offer almost, not unlimited, but we for a good number of years, whenever an educational establishment buys a machine from us, we basically give them as much training as they need. And that we offer them the choice whether they want to come into our showrooms or whether they'd like us to go out to their facility.
So I think in terms of this industrial strategy document, if you like, the government are willing to plough money into establishments or whatever. But I do feel we're doing our bit to help the country get skilled up to be able to make us a force to be reckoned with.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Yep. I think we've covered quite enough topics for one day in a podcast, Mark. So it's been great to talk about the 400 UNC, get your experience and some other topics that are relevant to XYZ. So we hope you've enjoyed listening and watching this podcast. As we said in episode one, we need your feedback. If you don't tell us what you want to learn about, what you want to discuss, then we're going to struggle to create a whole series of these. So we need your feedback. Give us the feedback on the YouTube channel or through your normal podcast download, and we will try and endeavour to give you information and talk about the things that you want to talk about. So keep an eye on the website for the actual seminar days that we're going to run. We're going to have the UMC up there along with automation and see how you can benefit your business. So keep an eye out on that for us, and we look forward to seeing you at one of the showrooms at one of those seminar days. Mark, thanks for your time today. It's been great talking to you, and keep an eye out on for the next episode of the podcast. Cheers for now.